Also hear Art Beat at the end of this hour at 10:50. And in the meantime, I have two guests from the School of Music at Western Michigan University here to preview a concert of curious implications for next Wednesday on the Bullock Series in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. The group, or the name of the ensemble that came out of this idea, is called Nodes. And here to talk about it are composer Christopher Biggs and saxophonist Andrew Rathbun. And it is good to see you again. I'm really looking forward to, you know, pulling some of these descriptions and concepts out of you this morning to share with listeners. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us, Kara.
Yeah, thank you.
Good to have you here. So would you take us back a little ways and explain the ideas and concepts and the connections and communication that went on about creating a group that is both acoustic and electronic?
Yeah, sure. I've always been interested in what Chris has been up to in terms of processing acoustical sound and turning that into something otherworldly. So during the pandemic, we started to get together, just the two of us, in his garage, and we were just playing improvised duos together. And I would play things, and he would process those. And in real time, sort of spit those back at me and direct those sounds and textures and ideas back at me, which would make me respond in a way that I don't usually play. This project really does push me into a different improvisational space, which is one of the reasons I really like it. And so we just kept developing that and you know, meeting in the summer. And then we decided to rope in two other colleagues, drummer Keith Hall and bassist John Hebert, into the mix. And so then we just started improvising with the four of us together. And then some different ideas about, you know, oh, we should have some things that are structured. So I wrote this sort of, it's a very sketchy kind of piece, but it ends up being actually quite a long and more involved than I ever sort of imagined piece that we play. And then we're really fortunate to have Dr. Lisa Coons, who wrote like a graphic piece that we play, which is super interesting. And actually, Chris wrote a piece that we're not performing on this concert, but hopefully in the future we're going to sink our teeth into that. And yeah, then that's basically the genesis of the project.
What can you add to that, Christopher? What was it like to have you know, Andrew come to your garage and improvise? I get the sense that you actually have many collaborators with whom you improvise, even online.
Well, yeah, since the pandemic started. So I've been looking at taking my composition practice, which is largely, you know, developing computer programs to work with acoustic instruments where there's a lot of predefined activity, and turning that into something that I can perform and manipulate in real time. And in a lot of ways, the pandemic was the perfect time to do that because things were shut down. So it was a great time to revamp my research and my practice because concerts weren't happening. And it was great. And so I would develop systems. I mean, we were meeting almost every week for a while, every single week. And then I would be like, oh, I needed to work like this. And I'd reprogram. And it's just been super fun. And it's challenging and exciting. And it's always very interesting. Mm.
Are there any boundaries that you need to set in order to do this kind of free work that can surprise you at every turn?
I mean, for me personally, there are no boundaries, but we still operate within – like we're creating harmony, melody, rhythm, form in real time. It's just that we don't decide that beforehand. But those things exist. And sometimes – you know, it's very abstract, and other times it's very concrete. We just arrive at at those moments together.
Yeah, I think we're confined to some extent just by who we are and what we're likely to do. Yeah. So there's already that. And then based on what we all bring, we just adapt really, really quickly to what each other do. And since Andrew, Keith, and John have played so much together, I think they adapt to each other and imitate each other super fast. And it's been fun to see and then try to learn from that and incorporate that into what I do and how I listen.
And just that other element that Chris brings, like the three of us could play together just without, you know, this electronic element, and we would do one thing. But when you add Chris to the mix, it brings this whole other element in, which then forces us to react completely differently than we normally would. So I think that's one of the things that, you know, for Keith and John and myself, makes it really interesting. Because, again, you're sort of forced out of your comfort zone into a place that you don't usually inhabit. So that's what, again, it's a whole nother element that makes it really interesting for us.
Andrew Rathbun, John Hebert, Keith Hall, and Christopher Biggs will be on stage at 7:30 next Wednesday for your calendar. It's part of the Bullock series, which is a longstanding series that is part of the Bullock Performance Institute's support of live music at Western Michigan University. And the Bullock series also has a pre-concert component. So at 7 o'clock, I'm guessing we'll hear from some or both or all of you talking about this concert as we are today with a little bit of a, you know, primer for the audience.
In Canada, we say primer.
Yeah, primer. It's like, took me back there. So as I look at the program sheet, you'll find the details, by the way, on the School of Music website under Bullock Series. It says Andrew Rathbun, saxophone and electronics. John Avera, bass and electronics. Keith Hall, drums. So he's not operating any additional processing. And for Chris, it's electronics and live processing. By electronics, Andrew, what does that mean for you?
So, it just means some digital signal processing. So the saxophone is going to run through a signal processor to create delay and reverb, distortion, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really quite different from what, you know, Christopher's doing in that it's almost a little more primitive in a way. Like what Chris is doing is really rather striking, and the sounds and textures that he creates, it's really like nothing I've ever really heard before. It's quite innovative. Whereas there's a long history for saxophone players to go through processing units to, you know, do what everyone's dream is, to sound more like a guitar player. So in a lot of ways, that's, you know, some of the patches that I've created, that's what it sounds like. But a lot of them just, you know, creates a more ambient setting, again, with delays and long reverbs and things like that. And John's doing a similar thing. The bass is going through, again, some digital signal processing pedals, guitar pedals.
Yeah, I was thinking of the floor unit.
The floor, yeah. So I have a floor unit that's all self-contained. He has, you know, volume pedal and a delay and something else. I can't remember.
Something that sounds really cool.
Yeah. I think our thought process there was to sort of bring, you know, what we can timbrely to the table to kind of sort of meet, you know, Chris and his world a little bit, you know. At least that's what my thinking was.
Well, I can picture that, but I'd love some more detail from Chris about, as a performer, how many different physical objects are you able to manipulate? What do you plan on? Is it a keyboard and beyond?
Yeah, so I've kept adding devices. So the first thing I used, which is really fun, is I wrote a sampler where I can capture any of their signals And then I have pads, and they're XYZ pads, meaning they respond to my pressure, my horizontal and vertical position. So I just link those to features of the sample. So I can sample Andrew, and I can make the – with X, I can make it go faster or slower when I play it back. With Y, I can make it go higher or lower in pitch, and then I can change volume. So it becomes very dynamic if I get him doing something like beat-up-boop. I can make it go beat-up-boop, 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 right? Or I can make it go beat-up-boop, 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 beat-up-boop. Right, like things like that. And, it, you know, you can fit stuff in with the texture, and that's one device. And I have another device that's effects chains, but as opposed to the effects where, you know, Andrew and John just have their feet to kind of turn things off and on if they want to change settings, bend down and turn knobs. I have another pad that's another XYZ pad that controls the parameters of those effects. Mm-hmm. So the effects can change dynamically. So they feel performed as opposed to a layer that's just imposed statically, like a delay line or something that you'd be used to hearing. The delay line would change. So I can, if Andrew or somebody plays faster, I can make the delay faster or longer. So I can respond the effect parameters in relationship to the material. And then I have other devices too, but there's about five different things. One of them is a keyboard, but they're all very tactile. They're it's not like a piano because, again, it's going to respond to all those different features, my pressure continuously, my X position and my Y position on the key. So you program those things and you can link them to anything you can control about sound, about a sampler or a synthesizer. I can just attach it. I can attach those physical actions to what I want to control.
Nodes is the name of the group. It's a new project from Western faculty who are moving the jazz tradition and the modern electronics composition tradition together in live performance. And this is the debut, right, of Nodes on next Wednesday at 7:30.
Yeah, we're really excited about it.
We have some sample tracks to listen to, and perhaps we'll start with the shorter one, and it is called Concept Inflation. And I'd love to have one of you lead us into this piece.
Yeah, so this is something I wrote for the group to play, something where we felt like, oh, well, we have all these, you know, free pieces that we like to do. It would be cool to have something that has, you know, some more defined parameters just as a contrasting piece. So this is what I came up with.
And that is music from Nodes. If you just tuned in, we are listening to a brand new group that is centered at Western Michigan University in the School of Music. Christopher Biggs is a professor of composition and a leader in electronic music processing and now improvisation with electronics. And the jazz faculty, Andrew Rathbun, John Hebert, and Keith Hall are all part of the group and creating pieces in the moment, but also pieces that are pre-written, pre-planned. This one by Andrew Rathbun called Concept Inflation, and we just heard, 3 minutes of it. I have a lot of questions. the first thing to my mind is how rich and complicated it can sound, and yet you told me that it's all happening right in the moment rather than, you know, adding all of these details later through multi-track recording.
Right.
One way. There, I got
you. Yeah, that's the thing that's most exciting about it is it is very spontaneous, and that's the part of music making that's always gotten me the most excited is things that happen like in the moment. So yeah, it's really exciting to experience that and be in the middle of that sound and sort of live in that world that Chris has created, you know, with these instruments that he's basically built from scratch. That's another thing that's been fascinating to watch. It's like, you know, it was one table and then there's another table and then there's another, what's that do? Like he's just constantly been adding to this new instrument that he's basically built from scratch.
Yeah. So much of your concepts go from zero. Like you begin by building programs and devices that you know can get the effect you want, but it can take a long time. How big is your like library of accessible process? I don't know what you would call it. Like you've created so many things for so many pieces. Do you hang on to them and reuse sometimes?
Yeah, I definitely hang on to the coding, and I keep the coding, and I just repurpose. The thing is there's so many generic effects that you can get or generic synthesizers you can get that generally I design things particularly for each piece. And that was what was challenging and exciting about this is that, okay, I can't make something overly specific. It has to be multi-purpose and has to be highly variable. So when you have the physical devices, you're kind of going to be limited to the number of knobs and buttons they have. So you have to think about what's this going to do? Is it going to, you know, how much can I think about at one time, right? How much can I remember, you know, because I'm sampling and recording them into N number of pads, like 16 pads. And I want to remember all that. And then I need to remember what each knob and button does, and things have different states. So it's been... Every time we play, I rewrite it. And then I'm like, okay, no, this can be better. This can be simplified. I'm not using that. So I'm guessing I could do that for another year and a half, 2 years, and then I'd probably be excited about doing something else. But, you know, it needs to be rewritten and redone constantly and made either more or less specific.
You know, Andrew, John, and Keith are like improvisers of such great quality, and that's what they do for a living. And were you at all intimidated to just say, I'd like to form this project and I'd like to be an improviser too?
Yeah, oh yeah, totally. Yeah. Yes, completely intimidated.
How has the journey been in the last year?
Well, I think Andrew and I met, and then I think his excitement was really clear. And it's like, oh, okay, I can do this. It's all right. Like, I'm not just going to, like, flat out flop and embarrass myself. And then there's just been stages of confidence growing since that time.
And for you, Andrew, as a performer, you're, like, hyper-listening as things are happening on stage and in the moment with music. But Christopher can sneak in with some of the most unusual sounds. Sometimes it's very subtle, I hear, and other times, you know, it's in your face.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're getting used to a whole different dimension.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's totally changed the way I play. I have to change the way I approach things just because – just even in terms of the amount of space that there is. Like there's a lot less space, so I have to like, okay, I can't play right now. I have to wait. So there's a lot of waiting and listening and also trying to figure out, okay, how do I make what I do fit with these completely new sounds and textures that I've never really experienced at this level before, you know, in terms of the amount that there is and the density that there is. So it does change your mindset, you know. And then what's also interesting is to bring that mindset back into another setting. Like, well, what if I play like that in this setting? What happens? So, you know, it's been really instructive for me on a variety of levels.
Have you had any feedback from students? Have you allowed students to?
Well, they haven't really heard
it
yet.
Yeah.
I mean,
you'll find out.
Yeah, Wednesday will be the first. You know, we'll see if they stay or if they split. You know. Yeah. So well, it'll be. I'm curious to see, you know, both the reaction from the mat students and from the jazz students, what they think.
Yeah, I'm teaching a class in live electronic music performance, and in that class on Tuesday, the day before the concert, I'm going to bring my setup in and I'm going to show them its potential. Because the music that we do might be a little different than what many of the technology majors are expecting or what they think of, because a lot of them are interested in electronic music performance through being a DJ or something like that. So the content will be different, but I think the value of the tools and understanding its complexity and how they might appropriate it, I think they'll get that out of it for sure.
Once again, a reminder that this concert is at 7:30 next Wednesday in the Dalton Center Recital Hall at Western Michigan University. Mask wearing is required in all Western buildings. Please be vaccinated. That's just a personal thank you. And the group is Nodes. It's the debut of this fascinating meld of live electronic improvisation with acoustic musicians, Andrew Rathbun, John Hebert, Keith Hall, with Christopher Biggs. And we've just heard a small sample, and we do have a larger piece to listen to with a funny name, Lethal Monkey Spit. And I know you have kids, Chris. Is that something that came from playing with?
No, my friend was a researcher on monkeys, and he got bit. And he had to be quarantined and everything.
Oh, it's a pretty serious situation.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. No, it's all old, but it's just in my head, I just always imagined him running away from these monkeys. Because, one of the monkeys got kind of out and then ended up biting him. And it's a funny thing in my head, and it's passed, and he's fine.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, good. Tell us about what we'll hear in this work.
This one is completely free, so there was no notation or anything like that. And we recorded at La Luna maybe last January or February, and this is most of what we did. Someone would start, and we would add, and we would build into something. And I think this one has a particularly satisfying form. If you want to listen technically, one thing at the beginning you can hear is Andrew will be playing, and there's a synthesized sound, but I'm extracting his pitch and amplitude information, and that's mapped to the sound, so in some ways I follow his real-time performance automatically.
An example of live performance with electronic processing by four terrific performers: Christopher Biggs, electronics, live processing; Keith Hall, drums; John Hebert, bass and some electronics; Andrew Rathbun, saxophone; and same. Nodes is the name of the group, and it will be very exciting to be in the Dalton Center Recital Hall next Wednesday at 7:30 to hear what comes of this. I have to ask if at times, I know you're all very professional, you know you have to keep going, as in the middle of a piece, have you ever just wanted to, had a funny reaction that almost stopped you from playing in the moment because of just how amazingly strange or different or surprising
a sound
was?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we'll all look at each other and laugh sometimes. Like, that's when something – sometimes that happens because, there's such a synergy, you know, that's happening in the moment. It's almost funny sometimes, like, wow, I can't believe we all just came to that same place at the exact same time. So sometimes you laugh about that, or sometimes Chris will, like, you know, he'll send something back to you and you sort of wish, like, wow, I wish I could do that, but you can't do it because it's so, you know, complicated. It's such a complicated, you know, texture or sound, or like he was saying before, the speed of things, like, you know, it's like, it's like a gesture that you play and then suddenly it comes back to you at like hyper speed. You know, it's like, wow, I wish I could do that. You know, so sometimes that can be funny. You know, so yeah, there's, you know, I'm a big proponent of humor and music, although I find it very challenging to do convincingly. I really like a lot of music that has a, you know, humoristic element to it.
And yeah, are you enjoying having fun with this too, Chris?
Oh yeah, it's super fun, and because things aren't written out, and we're not using a score, there's risk involved that sometimes leads to humor because I might not remember what I've stored somewhere, and I'm gonna play it back, and I think it's like the bass playing a low note, and I'm gonna try to play it two octaves higher, and then it's not that, all right, or something, which will happen, and it's just part of the process, and you know sometimes, you know, it's fun, like in that one that you just heard, when Andrew came in with the kind of the low notes towards the end, you know, it's really fun through that process. We're kind of setting up this rhythm and texture and background that then he's going to solo over. But during that time, we're finding it and making it cool. And I think that's fun for us. And I think it's fun for the listeners. And yeah, definitely surprising things happen and can be entertaining.
Well, we're almost to the end of our time here. I do want to remind, I hadn't mentioned this yet, but if you're not able to be in the concert hall for any reason, you can tune in online during the concert. The Western School of Music has been offering that for over a year now for the Bullock series and other concerts. So it is pretty easy to buy your ticket and tune in and almost feel like you're there. And I think there's opportunities to watch afterwards as well.
Yeah. Yes, on our School of Music YouTube channel, all the performances are available.
So no excuses. But being there in person is always kind of the best, the most visceral way to enjoy it. About how many pieces do you plan to play? How long is the program?
I think we have like four or five things sort of scheduled. We're playing this graphic piece by Dr. Lisa Kunz that we mentioned, and this piece, you know, that you played earlier, which is again a structured piece, and then we'll sort of fill around that with some of these freely improvised pieces. So I anticipate between four and five pieces. We don't exactly know because, you know, the free pieces, you know, who knows what direction those will take or how long we'll spend in one area before we move to another area. So it remains to be seen.
With a graphic piece, that concept, that idea, you're interpreting something that is not musical notation as we know it?
Correct. Yeah. Lisa's really made like a beautiful piece of art that will be displayed for not only us to follow, but for the audience to follow along with as well. So it kind of sets up these zones, for lack of a better term, that we sort of try and realize musically. And as the piece evolves, we sort of evolve with it in terms of, you know, as the art is evolving, we're sort of trying to score that sort of almost in real time.
How do you rehearse it?
Chris has been really generous and has taken his television set for off the wall down into the basement so we can all watch the piece. You know, they've made a video of the piece and it sort of unfolds and we're just sort of following along. And we also have sort of music, you know, we also have the art in front of us and we're following along. And there's some instructions, you know, on the piece. You know, John's even doing like a spoken word element that's incorporated into the piece as well. And that's really cool. Like Chris is processing his voice as he's speaking. So it's got a lot of layers to it.
In speaking with Lisa Kunz in the past, she has drawn on her farm background, for lack of a better phrase, this idea of natural sounds and even wind. Are there elements of that in this piece as well?
Yeah, I think, and there's definitely nature stuff. I mean, everyone should really check out the video and the score. There's actual bugs that are part of the score. There's graphics from medical texts. And the spoken word that John does is blackout poetry. And there's kind of more of that in the score than John will actually read. So it's just ripe with, I don't know, kind of metaphor and possibilities for interpretation, and it is quite beautiful. And then our instructions are limited, but it creates a very clear trajectory over the piece for kind of a flow and an emotional arc.
Yeah, I know in press releases and publicity, Western is very, very proud of its science research and development, but this is what universities are about too. This is research and development.
Absolutely.
This is incredible conceptual realizations that are made possible by having a structure here that allows it.
Yes. Yeah.
And you're going for it.
We're going for it.
I know you're very busy. You all have private teaching. You have classes to teach. You have other ensembles. You have your own performing careers to nurture and use as models for your students. And here you are with Nodes.
Yeah. It's all about, I mean, we're not the kind of folks who like to play it safe, and this is not a safe play by any stretch. So I think that's another reason why we're sort of excited about it.
Well, I think we have to leave it there for now. The program Art Beat coming up in just a couple of minutes, and the Chicago Symphony at 11 o'clock. I hope that listeners who tuned in during the music were excited to hear it and not totally shocked because, wow, 24/7, it's tonal here on Classical WMK. the service that we use isn't doing a whole lot to push the envelope toward what's actually happening. This is so exciting. Chris and Andrew, thank you for joining me today. And folks, the concert's next Wednesday. Details at the School of Music website.
Thanks for having us.